This is Liz Prather. Welcome to Writing as Healing, a Heinemann podcast series focused on writing as a tool to increase healing in students and teachers. We know that academic learning doesn't happen without social and emotional support, and writing as a key literacy is uniquely positioned in every classroom to do both. How can writing help students see they are not alone? This week, I'm joined by Barry Lane, songwriter and teacher, to talk about the invitation of the open page. Instead of following rules in writing, students learn the power of writing and the intrinsic joy of expressing their consciousness on this planet. We begin with a story from Barry's childhood when he discovered the power of writing.
I think I started in fourth grade, and I think the aha moment for me was I had this teacher, Miss Foley, and she would put a picture on the wall, and, you know, it was kind of a normal assignment, but not in the school that I was in. She'd put this picture on the wall, and she said, write about this picture. Use your imagination, you know, that word. And I thought, I'd never heard that word before. And most of the kids would do what a lot of kids do when teachers give an assignment. I call it pooping out paragraphs, is what a lot of state tests, that's all they want. They want to have, like, kids to be able to format their thoughts a certain way. But she was like, no, just go with it. And I took it home with me. I couldn't stop writing. I realized the one breakthrough to me would be, I'd be at night after taking my bath and having my bathrobe on, and I'd be pacing back and forth thinking about my story. You know, and Hemingway said, writing is long periods of thinking and short periods of writing, you know. And that's when I realized, wow, this writing thing is really cool. You can create something new and different. And as a writer, in my youth, I wrote a lot of short stories. And one of the themes was the Holocaust. My parents grew up Jewish, and a lot of my parents' families died in Europe. And yet, I did not experience it directly the way you would have if you'd been through the war. I experienced it in, you know,
right,
someone being afraid that you're going to drown, or just parents just being hyper vigilant about everything. And to try to write about that through the gauze of time is what I tried to do a lot then. And I write poetry sporadically. I never thought of myself as a poet. And I think that that's probably because I don't do it every day. But I do write songs. And songs is a kind of poetry,
right,
but it's not poetry. It's really about music. Right now I'm writing a play about my songs.
Tell me a little bit about your process.
To me, the day before the sun comes up is like a blank piece of paper. You know, nothing's happened yet. No errands are required. Nothing but, you know, a cup of coffee, a blank slate. And it's also my least critical time. Many times late at night, I'm not one of those writers who, I've heard writers talk about how the night erases everything from the day and they can just have a blank slate. But I'm like, the day is just full of chatter and everything else. And so in the morning is that time of grace. I would call it a grace period. I'm not as critical. And if I'm working on something, especially songs, I find, if I hit the impasse at night and you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning, suddenly the room is bigger. It's not a closet.
Yes.
I can see a wider field of vision, and, oh yeah, I could throw out this whole song. And, I like to look for those kind of things that we would call coincidences, synchronicity, things that can help us find a new direction. And to me, it's all about just having that open page, that sense.
Yeah.
When kids say, oh, I can't write, I don't have anything to write about. If the page is already full, it's hard to write. But if you can find that possibility, because I think the mental health is all about finding that open space in your head, too.
I'm so grateful that you shared with me your book, Healing, the healing book, the healing pen. Mm-hmm. And in that, you describe a writer as someone who, it's a person who asks questions. And I think that that's kind of what you're talking about, in the sense that there's a blankness or a silence or a space where someone can kind of step into it and ask a question that's on their heart. Talk a little bit about how you arrived at that definition of a writer as someone who asks questions.
Yeah, I think this came early in my career as a teacher. I was lucky enough to teach at UNH, University of New Hampshire. And Donald Graves had a big influence here. But Don Murray especially had a huge influence there. For him, a writing conference was where you sat down. And we'd do this. This is like the best prep for any teacher of writing. You would meet with every student every week for 20 minutes.
Wow.
And they'd bring you their writing. And if you were good at it, they would read their piece or you would read their piece, whatever. But you wouldn't come with a lot of preconceived notions about the writing. I mean, if you were good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you were kind of not so good, you might be like that brilliant English teacher that marks everything up in red and says, here's how you can make this perfect kid.
Tell me a little bit about your force field for good. And I'm thinking especially your work with the students in Texas that you've been doing.
Yeah, actually, I've been doing it all over the country. But recently, I got invited to Uvalde, Texas, to do this program on kindness that I've been doing now for a number of years. And it's interesting because it overlaps with literacy in a kind of an interesting way, because a lot of schools teach kindness or have it as part of their curriculum, but it's sort of like rule-based and what I call acronym-based, where you'll have like the word care, and it'll be like C stands for courage, A stands for... So a few years ago, I told you the evolution of Force Field for Good, because that will actually help you to understand the work in Texas that I did. But it evolved with a song that I'd written for children called Know Your Higher Self. In the chorus is Know Your Higher Self, take it off the shelf, give it room to play every single day. Forget about the fight, reach for what is right. You can teach yourself to fly when you want to cry. And the song's about learning to basically find that inner nobility, the principle of kindness inside yourself, rather than simply the rule-based kinds of kindness. So I wrote that song with a friend, Jay Banta, wrote the music part. I just put it on SoundCloud, and a teacher in Michigan wrote to me, and she said, that one song changed my entire class. I said, what do you mean? She said, they were a really tough group of kids, and which usually means boys in the class. I don't know why, but I think it's boys and girls. It was a second grade class. They didn't know how to learn. They didn't know how to be with each other. Mm. And after listening to that song, we sang it every day, and we got rid of all the class rules. And we changed it with one rule. Be your higher self.
Yeah.
So now instead of like, he's doing that, he's being a bully. The anti-bully programs are about, oftentimes about defining what a bully is, not about defining what kindness is. And instead of that, they'd say things like, you know, I wasn't being my higher self when I pushed you, sorry. Well, I wasn't being my higher self when I called you the name before you pushed me.
That's incredibly transformative for a second grader to have that set of tools. That's powerful.
And it's an intrinsic, the way it corresponds with writing, is it an intrinsic love of writing, of expression, of being kind. Instead of like just following rules, like when it would be in the writing sense, it would be learn how to write a 5-paragraph essay or learn how to write it, blah, blah, blah. And you don't realize what the power of writing is when you don't know what you know, the intrinsic joy, I guess you call it, of being able to express yourself on this planet, your consciousness in a vast universe or multi-universe, whatever they call it now. It's amazing.
It's a gift.
Yeah.
Has writing been healing for you in a way that has created your ability to use writing to touch others? Because I know you've also worked in prisons and with people who have been hurt and who have hurt other people, and they have a lot of healing to do. And you've created kind of a framework to allow them to access those memories, express those memories, and kind of give themselves grace. Is that something you discovered yourself as a writer, that you use writing to heal?
Yeah, I think so. But not always in the deepest sense of it. I was thinking about this. There's many different levels of it. You know, Tom Newkirk talks about creators create an itch and then they scratch it, you know. There's a lot of healing that comes from just scratching itches. Maybe minor healing.
Yes.
And also...
Absolutely.
I remember my first love when I was like 20 or whatever. I had to recover from a breakup, and I wrote this little book called The Rock, and it was kind of a takeoff on Shel Silverstein's The Giving Tree, you know, sort of the biggest bummer of a children's book. But it was like an attempt to understand the world and the pain of the world and turn it into something.
Yes.
Turn it into something that made sense. And I carry that with me. I wrote about the Holocaust a lot, like in my youth. I had this experience where I went to Disney World for the first time as a young man, and it's like 22, I think I was, and I sat on the bus. I went by myself, and I sat in the bus going to the park, and I befriended this woman, little woman sitting next to me, and she was a Holocaust survivor, and she had the tattoo on her left forearm, and we just started talking, and she was alone too. So I spent the entire day at Disney World with this Holocaust survivor. I thought this is a short story.
Wow.
The humor also is a big part of it. I write parody songs for teachers because I think teachers are...
I'd love to hear one.
Okay.
I'd love to hear a parody song for teachers.
Let me try this one. This is one I wrote for the Badass Teacher Association. It goes like this.
Okay.
It goes, I'm a badass teacher from a badass school. Don't read me your mandates. Don't feed me your rules. I'm a badass teacher in a badass day. For teaching is scorn and testing's a way. I safeguard our democracy and teach my students how to be free. I teach them to think. I teach them to feel. But most of all, I teach so their learning is real.
Yes.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Love it.
I do the very last verse. It goes like this. I used to be good. I used to be sweet. I closed my classroom door and shyly retreat. But your door was open and I heard you cry. We started to talk. We asked ourselves why, if we could find some common voice, take back our classrooms, reclaim our choice. We started to sing, we started to shout, dedicated teachers finally speak out. So that goes on, then it becomes, we're the badass teachers. I remember reading about this once during the Holocaust in Amsterdam, in Holland. There was this whole underground culture of parody songs that people would sing. And then when they'd be around the Germans, they'd just sort of whistle the tune. It's an act of resistance in the biggest form. The last song, the Badass Teacher Anthem, which I actually sang on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, about 50 yards from where Martin Luther King gave his speech at the Save Our Schools rally. It's sort of a... speeches are good, you know, evidence is good, talking is good, you know, rhetoric is good, but music and dancing, that can both feed the movement of what you're trying to do and heal, right. And heal the troops. So I did there's a place in D.C. called Busboys and Poets, and I have a literacy cabaret that I did there with the teachers. We did at night. It was like a nightclub, and with these songs, different types of songs like that. And that's like feeding the troops, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Yeah. It's a kind of healing that comes from actually being able to laugh at the things that oppress you and that and therefore transform it, you know, it's a little alchemy, transform the lead into gold.
And all of those things, humor and memories and community and connection and writing, all of those are not a replacement, obviously, for clinical therapy, but they're all tools of transformation and they're all tools to access a connection with a community of people who can create, like you said, a kind of a revolution of sorts, a revolution of peace. I guess I'm interested, is there one assignment that you consistently find in your vast compendium of writing assignments that touches a student's heart, that brings about almost all the time some kind of healing reaction or some kind of help students with trauma or pain.
There's a number of assignments that I find that, you know, the kinds of assignments that kind of go deep with kids. But sometimes I think it's like it depends on the class, and it also depends on the teacher. It depends on, it's like trust. You can't assign trust.
Yes.
Today, I want everybody to trust me. And then you give an assignment like that. That works. That doesn't work.
It doesn't work that way, does it?
You have to earn it. You earn it every day by how you treat students, and not just the students themselves individually, but the other students that they see you treating. So when I first wrote my book on healing and writing, I have this funny story. I went to this workshop. I didn't know anything about doing workshops or anything, so I started the workshop. Everybody write down a secret you've never told anyone in your life now. And 10 people just headed for the door immediately. And what I realized is that you can't do that. You have to like start somewhere else.
Right.
And so there was a number of places to start. And I think starting in the shallow end of the pool, to quote Kelly Gallagher, is a good thing to do with this. And so the shallow end of the pool was just fluency itself. Any assignments that teach fluency. My friend Jeff Hewitt, a poet, he has a great lesson where you just write down one thing you saw today between the time you got up and the time you're sitting here now.
Yeah.
And I just scribble them all on the board in 10 words or less or something like that, you know. And then, of course, close your eyes and you read it and you say, what's that? And you say, well, that's a poem. And that way you're freeing people from the chains of iambic pentameter or whatever it is that kids have in their brains. Even by third grade, kids don't think they're poets yet because they don't rhyme good enough or whatever. Yeah. So those kinds of fluency ones are good. Let me just tell you a few quick ones, though. For older students, write about a lost friendship in college or upper grades. Because the lost friendship has a beginning, middle, and end. And usually there's a reflection part. You know, why did I lose this friend? And it gets into...
I love that.
Yeah. Aristotle wrote about friendship a lot, the different kinds of friendships. You know, can you think of the friends who are your friend simply because, you know, you do stuff for each other? He does this for me, I do that. That's kind of a level. He ranked everything. So he said, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of a friendship. But then the highest form of friendship is where somebody actually wants you to do good. They want you, not because of any other reason, but they, of their human connection to you and their love for you. And that level of love is the thing that is so inspiring and also elusive. You know, sometimes you only have one friend in life like that, if you're lucky, you know. Like it takes, you know, and it's not to say all your other friendships are, you know, not good because of this, but it's this ability to reflect and a friendship, lost friendship has a beginning, middle, and an end too. So it is a story, you know, all ready to go. Some of my more famous lessons is the explode a moment where you take a moment in your life to write in slow motion. I can tell you Amy, this fourth grader who I wrote about in my book, The Healing Pen, she wrote about, you know, the moment her grandmother died when she was in the hospital and her feeling of grief and walking outside and seeing some geese fly away. Her father saying, that's your soul of your grandmother. And, you know, and she believed at that age. And but this was a kid that could not, her grief was so great, she could not be in class. And she would go to the principal's office and she had this little notebook that she would scribble snapshots, memories of her grandmother. And she'd draw.
Wow. And
so when she did this moment, this was like, and I got to tell you, this was a funny story because the school was, I would say it was a constipated school where people weren't writing, you know. It was like the school where the teachers felt they had to teach everything.
There were blockages is what you're saying.
And anyway, this girl, Amy, she wrote this piece and then she read it. And oh my gosh, what happened in that class was... It's one of those transcendent moments that happens only once in a while in the class where time stops and everyone started talking about death, you know, in fourth grade. And my grandfather said I couldn't go to the hospital. I was so mad at him. And then Amy turned to me, and this is probably the best testament to what this podcast is about, which she said, you know, I thought I was the only one who had this experience. I didn't realize. And she, the relief on her face and that sense of, you know, I'm not the only one. You're not alone. And when I went to Uvalde, Texas, I had many experiences. It was sort of a serendipity that I got a job there only 4 months after the terrible shooting in May and at the beginning of school. So basically, it was the beginning of the school year. I realized, how do I prepare for this? Because it was in my head, I felt I'm not ready for this. I don't know what to do. And even though I'd been doing this stuff for years. And then I thought, well, what you have to do is, it's not about me. It's never about me. It's about them. So there's a prayer I read about, make me a hollow reed from which the pith of self hath been blown. And I went there and some amazing things happened. One of them is I wrote a song called I Quiet My Mind to prepare to go there. And it's a song about healing and being able to step back when everything, you know, all the emotional stuff comes back to you. And so I'd written that song. And I also have a song that I'd written before called Find Your Happy Place, you know, deep within your mind. Life is not a race. Everyone is kind. Stay there for a while. Grow a rainbow smile. You are not alone. And I had kids draw pictures of their happy place. And we listened to the love in our hearts. And before I went, I saw this woman who does this thing called a heart meditation, where you make a heart out of your hands and you hold it over your heart. You think about all the love in your heart and how it got there, where it came from, you know, relatives, friends, God, whatever it is, where that came from. And then you raise the heart up to your eye level and look through the heart and look at the world through all the love in your heart. And then here's the fun part. We're not on the screen, so you can't do it with me. Then you take your heart, you do it like in basketball, where you bring your heart back down, and then you do like a chest pass where you go, and you spread it all around. You open your heart. And then I say to kids, now your heart is empty. There's no love in it, right? And they go, no. What do you mean? You gave away all the love in your heart. And they go, there's more. That was the healing, is that the love is more powerful than fear and hate. And that's the lesson. And it's the lesson of all great literature in some ways. It's a lesson of life. And so the very last class I taught there was a fifth grade class at the Uvalde Dual Language Academy. I was teaching like 10 classes a day for 20 minutes each. And I was like in total teacher jazz land where, you know what I mean? I wasn't going to do any lesson plans at that point. I would just go in and look for inspiration. And so I wrote on the board, I pledge allegiance to my heart. I said, what's the next line? This is Texas, where they do two pledges. They do the Pledge of Allegiance to America, and they do Pledge of Allegiance to Texas. Sure. And I said, let's do one to our heart. And this little girl puts her hand up. And this is verbatim, no editing at all. She goes, I will always stay true to myself. Great.
Wow.
Next. Another hand goes up. I will show grace to myself and to others. Next.
Wow.
Love will always matter, even when I'm mad. And then next, I won't let the sun go down in my anger. And then I just add it, I will choose the kinder path. And you want to hear it? I'll sing it for you. It goes like this.
Yes, I'd love it.
I pledge allegiance to my heart. I will always stay true to myself. I will show grace to myself and to others. Love will always matter even when I am mad. I will let the sun go down on my anger. I will choose the kinder path. I will choose the kinder path. I will choose the kinder path.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. For more information and to read a full transcript, visit blog.heineman.com.